are back with a funky ass new beat. I gotta say, I think we have our official opening clip of the semi-pro poker show with that beat. I've been looking for the right one for a little while now. It's been taking me quite a while. Just, you know, I'm sure you noticed the first two episodes had a different beat intro, or a different little audio clip, and then I just made this one, and I'm definitely liking it. I think this one is much better, a little better quality. Am I a DJ or any sort of producer by any sense of the word? No. But I can throw some shit down every now and then. Fuck the haters. Welcome to the Semi-Pro Poker Show. Welcome back to anybody who's listened to our first couple episodes, and welcome to anybody who is new to the show. Looking at the stats, our listener base has grown with the first two episodes, and hopefully that continues with this one. I am Curtis Umstead. I am your host. This is the journey to from being a recreational, serious recreational poker player with a professional mindset, in a sense, to becoming a professional poker player. Sorry again for the lateness. Got had a lot going on. I keep planning and keep preparing as if I'm going to be on schedule, and then some things occasionally happen, and I've just had to deal with that. So, fortunately, I've had some good things happen in my life. I got engaged last week. Can't believe it. Didn't really talk about it on here just because it was something I had secret, you know, in the works for a little while now. But you can plan all you want. You can talk about it with your partner all you want. But until they, you know, until you actually ask the question, or until they say yes, that you can prepare all you want. Popping the question is scary as shit, to put it lightly, because if you get rejected in that moment, I'm just saying, the shit changes forever with either answer. So it's a pretty big inflection point, or a pretty big crossroads that you face in your life when you go through something like that. But my girlfriend and now fiance did say yes, so that was big, and I had lots of support from lots of my friends and some listeners of the show, so thank you for that. It has been quite an outpour of support and just congratulatory text. My phone just was absolutely exploding all week, so that was cool. And I think it's actually important that I lead with that in mind, because I know I mentioned in the last episode that I wanted to talk about balance in the next episode, but not balance in terms of game theory, where you're balancing your hand ranges so you become essentially less readable. Your hand ranges become tougher to be constructed by your an opponent. Like, your perceived range becomes tougher to be created, and as a result, you're a tougher player to be playing against. I don't think I've ever played a balanced game, to be quite honest with you. I mean, maybe I've made some, you know, higher level plays where I think somebody is thinking a certain way, so I'll try and get above them and try and, you know, influence their thinking that way. But I mean, that's something that I have done very few times throughout my poker career, and it's just something that at the stakes that me and a lot of the listeners, I'm assuming, play, you're just not going to do that much. I mean, unless one day, let's say 2 years from now, we're recording and I'm a 10-20 pro, maybe then we can worry about balance. Maybe then we can worry about game theory optimization, or GTO. That's what it's called, GTO play. But we don't have to worry about it. No, the balance that I'm talking about is life balance. And I think this is important and something that I've kind of slowly begun, I realize it fully now, but for the longest time ago, back when I first got into poker seriously, you know, 3-4 years ago, I like lived and breathed poker. And what I mean by that is, you know, not only was I playing all the time and was I reading all the time, but like even some people I socialized with who I played, like we'd make like poker jokes, like about like life, you know. And looking back on that, I remember hitting a phase where I kind of hit a wall where I wasn't as enthused about playing anymore, where I didn't want to learn as much anymore. And I think that might have been a result of just having poker be too much as a part of my life. I think it dictated way too much. And that would be a time where someone could have told me, hey, are you like addicted? You know, I still say that I'm not addicted to gambling, because when you play poker skillfully and when you play it well and your opponents don't, you're really, in a sense of taking risks, you're not really risking long-term loss, you know, other than downswings or anything like that. That's just not going to happen to you very often. You know, I think I was just taking up way too much of my time, and I hit that wall, and I wasn't enthused about it, and I briefly thought I was, you know, I briefly considered, I knew I was always going to come back to the game, but I didn't know how long I wasn't going to play for a while, and I probably didn't play for, you know, a significant portion of time. Maybe, this may not sound like long to some people, but a couple months, and for me, for those of you who know me, and now I still essentially do live and breathe poker. It's something that I take very seriously in my life. That's a long time to just go cold turkey, not do anything, not do any material, not do, like, learn any material, not play, not do any of my own material. You know, I put it on hold for a while. And looking back on it, I'm glad I did, because you're always going to hit that burnout no matter what you do if you're doing too much of something. This goes far beyond poker. You could say you're an avid gamer, right? Like, what's a game that came out? Destiny, that came out a couple years ago. A lot of my friends play. I actually never played it, but a lot of my friends did. And they played for hours and hours. I mean, they just grinded these games out. And eventually, you know, there wasn't much content to sustain that sort of play style, and after a few hundred hours they were just like, fuck this game, it's boring now. And I think that's what's, it's kind of important to do anything like that. You could have a job you love, but if you're doing too much, if you're wearing yourself thin, you're going to hate that as well. If you spend too much time with a particular person where they're dictating everything, like unhealthy relationships and stuff like that, and I've been in them, that can get stagnant. I think this is just a universal concept where if you're not balancing your life correctly, if you're not having multiple things going on at once where you can take your focus off of something, then, you know, things just won't work out long term for you, at least with that particular thing that you're spending too much time in. Like, I think very few brains are able to just specialize in something and just go for it completely. I think these are people who are top in the lines of fields, people with brains, you know, like an athlete, like a professional football player or a professional basketball player, somebody who just literally lives and breathes the sport that they're playing for a living, where in order to stay on top, in order to stay on top of their game, they have to just be constantly working. I mean, just, I can't even imagine the brain, like, functionality where so much focus is going on one particular thing for, you know, 80, 90, 100 hours a week. And it's just such a tough thing to do. And I think it's the same in poker, where the top pros have just developed so much theoretical thinking, where they've presented new strategies, where they've been able to theorize and come up with game theory optimal play. That wasn't even a thing, you know, 10, 15 years ago, or at least a popular thing. And now, in order to be one of the best players in the world, you have to be so good at game theory optimal play. I mean, just you have to know everything. And whenever a new thing develops, you have to learn that. And maybe I have the capability to one day do this with poker. Maybe, you know, this is a point. You know, this podcast is about me trying to become a professional. Do I function that way where I can just completely work and eventually get to the top of my field? I mean, maybe, but like I said, I have to balance my life, and I'm glad that I have different things going on. I do have a job that's, you know, it's not terrible. It's not my favorite in the world, but compared to my last job, it's definitely a lot better. The job that I told you about in the first couple episodes, it's definitely better than that. I have my fiance. and we do lots of different things together. We try new things. We try and make sure that we're outgoing, that we're always doing something new, because we don't want things to get stagnant. You always want to be looking for something new to learn. That's what makes life fun, you know, learning new things, learning a new trade, or learning new things about a certain trade. And I've got my dogs, which, believe it or not, with how much two beagles can take up so much of your time. You know, I've got different things going on in my life, and I've got my social life with friends. I just have, and working out, you know, I have multiple things going on where I really don't have the ability to really get burnt out all that much. Not only am I not playing full time right now, you know, other than my podcast and my study, I'm only playing 15, 20 hours a week, which of course we plan on increasing. And I think with a 40-hour playing schedule, or 30, 40, whenever I do make the jump to full-time play, you know, there's different things that I can cut out. Like, I obviously wouldn't have a need for another job, or at least another full-time job. I could work part-time somewhere else, or not even have to work at all. You know, and I'll still have other things in my life that'll keep me grounded, that'll keep me balanced. And I just think it's important for your health, for your love of the game, and for other parts of your life to just always be open to making sure that you're not spending too much time on a certain subject. Now, I just have to emphasize that, but I will say that, you know, you do need to put significant time into becoming a better poker player if that is what you desire. It takes time. It takes a lot of time. Maybe others, it will take even longer for them than somebody else. Some people learn differently. Some people are just slower learners. Some are faster learners. It doesn't necessarily make you dumb or a smarter person. You know, we all learn differently. Like, I generally think I'm a smart person. I think logically about a lot of, I'm just really good at critically thinking. But I don't, and I know, just based on my prior experience in education, you know, I finished with over a 3.5 GPA in college. I mean, say what you want about my class schedule, but I definitely did really well. But am I the best learner in the world? Were there other people in my, you know, were there other fellow students who were just better learners? I mean, faster? Yeah, I definitely would say so. But I had to counter that by just working a little harder. I just had to naturally work a little differently, and I got it. So I just want to make sure you keep that in mind whenever you do try to get better, that, you know, just recognize what it takes for you to learn, because it takes differently, or it's different for other people, and just go with whatever way you learn best. I think that's something I'm going to talk about at another time, like learning styles, just kind of talk about how I learn things, you know, how I've learned all this material over the past few years that's gotten me to where I am today. All right, so just wanted to touch on that a little bit. If you ever have any questions, or if you ever want to have anything to add on, I feel like that was just a brief touch on balance. I mean, there's just so many things you can do. I mean, there's in my area alone, you know, I live in Norfolk, Virginia, but I have Virginia Beach, where you have, it's almost like a mini Panama City, where it's not actually smaller, but it's not as party heavy. I mean, Panama City, Florida is one of the biggest party spots in the world during spring break, but Virginia Beach, you have an oceanfront, you have a long stretch of bars, of hotels, restaurants, entertainment venues. You've got all sorts of stuff you can do. You also have the mountains, which are not too far from here for camping. Washington, D.C. is about a 2.5-hour drive. One of the coolest cities I have ever been to in terms of the history, the different activities you can do there. And, you know, I've got Baltimore 3.5 hours away. And Richmond, Virginia, which I actually haven't spent much time in, only an hour and a half away, and I've actually been told by a lot of people that there's plenty of stuff to do. So there's just, let alone throughout the state of Virginia, which has parks just everywhere, and I love nature. It's one of my things that I love to do, and my fiance, we like hiking, we like doing, you know, doing lots of outdoor things. So it's good to have these things, because if you just focus too much on one thing, I just think it's likely, unless you have that mentality of an athlete or of a top executive or you know, who have that just drive. That's just it's almost pure talent. You know, you can skillfully learn, I think, that, but some people just don't have that. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. Maybe that's just not for you. That doesn't make you a worse person, you know, or a less successful person. I want to emphasize that. But unless you have that, a burnout is just likely, because it's happened to me. And I've seen other friends who I've played with over the years who have gone through same lulls where they're just not interested in the game anymore. Some for a month, some for a couple of weeks, others for years, who are just now getting back into the game. So like I said before, it just varies for everybody. It just depends on the person. So just keep that in mind. If you ever want to add anything on balance, definitely post a comment in the Facebook page once this episode goes live and you're able to listen to it. I have one more thing. You know, I had two big topics that I wanted to cover today, and I didn't touch on this in the intro, and I should have. The other thing I wanted to talk about is hypocrisy. And boy, do I have a monologue for all of you in this topic, because I just gave what I thought was a pretty good episode, you know, going over my thought process of a hand, touching on, you know, more. I think I could have cut that just on that hand alone. I could have cut that to 15 minutes. But I know, listening back to that episode a couple times now, I noticed that I touched on different subjects, kind of branching away from the hand. Like, I'd reach a hand-reading portion of the hand, and I'd go off on the hand-reading for about 5-10 minutes. Not even related to that hand in particular. So I think I am kind of glad that I did that. I kind of did a brief touch on that. But I know at the end of the episode, I touched on, you know, people berating, people educating, how I thought it was really, really, really stupid. For your win rate, for the softness of your game, for, you know, for whatever. It's just bad for your poker life in general to be doing that to certain players. I just thought it was stupid. And sure enough, I had something very interesting happen during my last two sessions. So I was, before my last two sessions, I was on a 10-session win streak. I was on a pretty high upswing, I'm not going to lie to you. Kind of minimal, like some of the wins were pretty small. You know, probably the majority of these were under 100 big blinds in terms of wins. A couple others, I did have a couple big sessions, but really nothing, you know, it was a nice, definitely an upswing. You know, to go into financial specifics, like I told you all I would in the first episode, I told you I was going to be open book. I probably went from probably close to a $2,300 upswing in about a month, maybe a little under a month. So I had a really, really, really nice streak going there for a while. And, you know, that may not sound like a lot of money to a lot of you guys, but playing 1-2 and 1-2-5 game in that span, part-time, you know, that's pretty good. That's over 1,000 over 1,000 big blind upswing in a month. I mean, that's pretty high, you know, especially if we're only making, you know, 10 big blinds an hour. And, you know, I probably played, I don't even know, probably 30, 40, probably closer to about 50 hours during that time frame. You know, you multiply 50 times 10, or excuse me, you multiply 50 times 20, that gives you 1,000. So, you know, during that time frame, I should have made about $1,000, and instead I made $2,300. So I more than doubled what I was making before. So I was really making over $40 an hour over the course of a month. I mean, that's just really, really, really good. But it was definitely an upswing. But I talked about keeping a level head. I talked about not berating, I talked about keeping your ego in check, talked about, you know, educating. And sure enough, I had two pretty awful sessions. I mean, both of them I lost about, one of them I lost a full buy-in of, well, just under a full buy-in, I lost about 250. And another one, I lost around 310. So I lost just over a full buy-in for me of 150 big blinds. At 1-2, and another one I lost just under a full big. So just, You know, it happens. Of course it's going to happen. But did I play well? I think it's pretty polarizing. I think in some spots I played extraordinary. I think I made some of the coolest moves that I've ever made in my life. And it just happened on the spot, and that was pretty cool. That was kind of a little bit of a, you know, confidence booster, you know, that I was able to make good plays even in the middle of my downswing. I did have to check that, though, because I thought the other half of my play was not so good. For example, there was one player. You know, he's a friend of mine. He's a funny guy to play with. He's, you know, he's probably a winner in our game. I don't know how much, because he can put some streaks together both ways. He can be pretty loose aggressive. Probably one of the more laggy players. Probably the laggiest of the players at the game, but he's not too terribly laggy. I've seen guys who are much more aggressive than him. But he's, you know, like, but he's, no, I actually, the more and more I think about it, at least pre-flop, he can be a lag. He could be raising, you know, after a certain couple hours in the game, he could be raising 40, 50% of hands pre-flop. I mean, he can just, and he'll straddle, and he'll raise a straddle when people limp around. I mean, he's one of those guys. He can be pretty tough to play against. He's not my favorite guy in the world to play against, but he ran pretty good against me a couple hands where in a couple spots that were pretty close, and you know, maybe got there in the river or something. And I noticed myself a few hands later trying to go after the guy. Like, I was trying so hard to try and beat him. And I had to be completely honest about this, because that goes against everything that I have preached to you in the last episode. That was stupid. And I know I'm directly quoting myself when I say that you can't try and force these things. You know, you can't. You can try and outplay somebody if you know that you have an edge and you have the ability to outplay someone. And do I think that I play better than this guy in the long term? I mean, yeah, I'd say so. I've seen him get in these downswings where he really compounds it with bad play. He can tilt pretty easily. He can get way even more loose aggressive where he's raising over 50% of hands preflop. He can get maniacal when he tilts. And he's not helping himself with his image, which is just shit during these runs. So I don't do anything like that. But, you know, clearly, am I perfect? Fuck no. I did some stupid shit. For example, there was one hand where I opened king-queen offsuit preflop. And he called in the big blind. I was under the gun. The game was about six-handed. So king-queen opening up front. In general, it's kind of close, but I think it's okay in most cases. And in this case, it's definitely fine, seeing that we're not playing full. It's not a full table. We're playing a little shorthanded, playing six-handed. And the board came out 10-7-6. And he checked to me. I think I opened like 12 preflop, something like that. And I came out and I bet $30. Into about 36. There was someone else who called in the hand, so I bet close to pot size. Other guy calls, and he check raises to 85. Okay. And I somehow had convinced myself that because he'd been raising me a lot, and he didn't show amazing hands each time, but I think he had shown at least a solid pair during these times, and I don't think my image was very good. I was down a couple hundred at this point, and sure enough, I floated with the intention of taking this away against a guy who's aggressive and has just check-raised the flop into multiple people. Not just me, but there was another guy in the hand who's kind of fishy and is not very good. And he check-raised me, and I floated. Turn came a jack, so I actually turned a backdoor straight draw, and he led for $210 into a pot of close to just around there. was right about 2:30, something like that. And at that point, I decided to cut my losses. You know, I only had, when he led it to, I only had about 150 more behind me, so I didn't really have room to like shove and hopefully get a fold. You know, he's decent with poker math, so I think he would recognize the pot odds that he would be getting there, and it just doesn't really make much sense to do anything like that. So I just folded, but that's a stupid mistake. I mean, and he showed two pair, by the way. He had 6-7 on the flop. And how stupid am I for, like, floating? What the fuck am I doing floating at a 1-2 game against a decent opponent who's representing massive strength? You know, if we were heads up, I mean, maybe you could argue it, but even then, you know, my image is just so shitty. I'm clearly not playing well. I think I was c-betting more than I usually do, and it was just stupid to the point where I think I probably cost myself, I don't know how much of a negative EV bet that is in the long run, but I'm pretty sure that it's not even close to neutral. I think it's that terrible. What do I do? Like, what the hell am I thinking? What do I do if I turn a king? Am I just going to go with it? Am I going to commit what I started with, about $450? Am I just going to commit my whole stack to top pair? I mean, maybe I'm good. Is he going to call with a 10 then? You know, it was just stupid. And what 10 is he check raising to 80 with? Like, that's a pretty significant raise. Is he just all of a sudden just going with Jack 10 or Queen 10? You know, 10-9, which does have a gutter, but is he just blowing the pot up right there? I think a lot of us could probably safely say no, and that's my point. It was just fucking stupid. So that was from the first losing session I had. The next game I played, I had another losing session where I was just running like shit. I mean, the turn cards that I was getting, where I'd flop two pair, or I'd flop a straight, or I'd flop a set, and I was getting in these crazy spots where the absolute worst card in the deck would be hitting the turn. I mean, it was just unbearable. It was one of the, and we've all had those nights, but it was just like, you literally could not pick a worse card against a certain player too, where you just know you're about to be faced with a massively tough decision. So I was down about 150 in this spot. And before this hand happened, I had just played a hand where I think I'd checked the big blind with a 4-3 suited, and the board came out 7-4-4. And I had let out, gotten called by one person. The turn was a king. I had checked the flop because I wasn't playing well. I should be building a pot there 100% of the time, I think, against a 7. Or if someone limped in with a pair and doesn't want to fold yet. I don't think checking is terrible, but I do think against multiple opponents, and there were 4 people in the hand, that I should be betting that flop. Regardless, I checked, okay? Turn brought a king, and I now lead at this pot from the big blind, and I got a couple callers. And the pot's about $70. I think I led for, or $60. I think I led like $20 into, you know, about 20 and 2 callers. So pot's around 70, 80 bucks. River was a king. So now the top card, the top pair on the board pairs. And I have bottoms full. I have 4s full of kings. And this one opponent who, he's such a weird player. I literally cannot describe him. He usually likes to overplay. He took a while to call on the turn, and then he just like led half of his stack and on the river. I mean, I was really frustrated because this just kept happening, and I showed my hand face up, and he flipped over 10s. Like, he had limped in from late position. Or, I'm sorry, he'd limped in from the small blind with 10s. He had just called. He checked the flop with an overpair, called my bet on the turn. He overcalled. And then when the top card paired, he just went with it. He just stuck half of his stack in. He stuck like $60 into 80. He had 120 to start to when we went to the rip card. So of course, no, you know, me thinking that a recreational player who's just, you know, not great is just that just felt like a king there. And I kind of rushed to a decision. I just fold, and the other person folds, and he shows tens. I mean, I just lost my shit because I had no idea what just happened. And he was like, yeah, I just, you know, I was going to bluff the river no matter what. That's literally what he said. And of course, that play is fucking stupid, you know, because I'm representing it. I could have a king when I bet the turn, let alone a four. And if the river card bears a king, like, I'm obviously never folding a king. So what the fuck are you doing? That play makes absolutely no sense. I mean, just checking and limping tens, not betting your overpair on the flop, calling when an overcard, overcalling by that when you in the card, when an overcard hits the turn, and then betting when that overcard pairs the river. I mean, it's fucking stupid. And, you know, it's just one of those weird things that happen. So I was tilted from that. This very next hand happens where I have a 6-7 of diamonds. And, you know, I decide to complete from the small blind. And I was a limp pot. Board comes out. 8-6. Okay. Or excuse me. God damn it. I can't get any of my hands wrong. This is the problem with me not taking hands down with notes. So bear with me here. 9-8-5. So I had 6-7 of diamonds and I flop a straight. Okay. And I check, stupidly. Again, it's a limped pot. So this is how I could tell I was tilting, which I don't do very often, but I'm clearly not playing the way I usually do. I'm now slow playing. It was a complete rainbow board, you know? And my opponent, who's this guy I talked about who I've been trying to beat, leads out from late position. He limped in this hand. And I just smooth call. Okay. So I'm just butchering the shit out of this hand already. I'm just doing everything absolutely wrong. So we're heads up going to the turn. Pot's about $40. Between 30 and 40. The turn is a jack, offsuit, or diamond. So it brings backdoor diamonds. And I lead out again for 80. Or no, I lead for 40. And now all of a sudden my opponent makes it 110. And I sat there, I'm like, what happened? I mean, would he... It just seemed... I had alarm bells ringing off in the back of my head. And it was just a scary moment because I'd been losing on some really weird turn cards over the last couple games. And initially, this seems pretty harmless. But at the same time, something was just going off in my head. Like, that this hand was not going the way I had planned. Even though this guy was loose aggressive, this was a really, really strange time for him to now raise that large. I mean, 1-2, I know we've talked about it before, where some people think in relation to pot size with bet sizing, but other people just think in terms of absolutes, where, you know, $100 into $200 might not seem like a lot to you or me, but to them, $100 is $100. That's a lot of money to them in a poker game for them to be gambling. So that was a pretty significant portion. And he kind of thinks like that a little bit sometimes. He can kind of stray between both. That's why some of these players are just really, really strange. It's hard to pin down sometimes, but anyway, I just call, and we both have effective stack size is probably about 300 going to the river, and the river card is an ace of diamonds bringing in front door diamonds, and he thinks about it and bets 160. Like, I don't know if he really liked that river card or not, if he was, you know, if he was semi-bluffing with diamonds on the turn. I would think once he completes his flush on the river that he would bet larger. So that didn't make too much sense. But I sat there for a while. I'm just like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I flipped over my hand while I'm mulling my decision. Just couldn't believe how bad I'd been running on these super scary turn and river cards. It was just unbelievable. And I even said it out loud, just how I couldn't fucking believe it. But that's the point where I started tilting and I was having these outbursts, and even though some of it was funny, some of the stuff that I was saying, it's still something that completely goes against what I've been preaching. These losses are going to happen. It's important that these losses happen. You should learn to embrace it. And I guess I got a little bit of what's called winner's tilt, where you've won for so many sessions in a row, you're just on top of the world, you're confident, you know, maybe you think that you've just hit a new stage, where some of that winning is probably from you running above expectation. In fact, the majority of it probably is from you running above expectation. Let's just keep it real. And I wanted to call so bad. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I just wanted to beat this guy so bad. But in the end, I started thinking about how I'm going against everything that I'm preaching. And on a basic strategy level, I think this is all I have right here is a bluff catcher. I don't think he's betting a set this way. You know, I don't see how he ever shows up with jacks. Like I said, like a turn set of jacks that he's starting to raise or anything like that. And he would have to check the set on the flop when it got checked to him. That wouldn't make too much sense. So, after a while, it was just, I couldn't find many hands that I beat, so I folded. I folded the straight, and he turned over queen 10. That he checked through on the flop, he turned the gut shot straight with the jack on the turn. 8, 9, 10, jack, queen. We know where I had 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But I just wanted to go over that because I felt like I went against the things that I preached to you all just a week ago, or 2 weeks ago. And I told y'all from the very beginning that I'm going to be real in an open book. So, just so you know, I myself can be quite the hypocrite. So, it was a learning experience. It's showed me that I don't have these ideologies down 100%, that there's still work that I need to do to master my tilt control. And maybe the one part of tilt that I haven't focused on is winner's tilt, where all of a sudden that big streak you've been having breaks and you start to lose that confidence when you really should just be playing the same way you've been playing the whole time, as long as it's not being affected by those streaks. A little bit of a shorter episode today. That's going to wrap it up. Next week we'll be talking about, I might go back into some hands. Looks like I might be taking a day trip to Atlantic City in about a week, and never actually been, so I'm looking forward to that. Play at the Borgata. I've heard great things about playing at that casino for a long time now, so that'll be fun. I'm also playing tonight and Wednesday, so I'll definitely have a few hands for you guys, along with some new topics to discuss. But that's going to wrap it up for us today. We've taken one more step to becoming professional poker players. All right, see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.